This podcast is supported by Progressive, a leader in RV insurance. RVs are for sharing adventures with family, friends, and even your pets. So if you bring your cats and dogs along for the ride, you'll want Progressive RV insurance. They protect your cats and dogs like family by offering up to $1,000 in optional coverage for vet bills in case of an RV accident, making it a great companion for the responsible pet owner who loves to travel. See Progressive's other benefits and more when you quote RV insurance at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet injury is an additional coverage and subject to policy terms.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host, Joe River. Joining me today is Ian Doyle. How are we, Ian?
I'm okay, yourself, Joe?
I'm not too bad. And Beth Lindup, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Nice to see you. Welcome to the Blood Red Podcast. Liverpool are back top of the league. Well, they were knocked off very briefly by Man City. After a 3-1 win over Burnley on Saturday, trickier than it sounds. I think we both predicted 3-1.
We both predicted 3-1, and I would like to point out that in my assessment of what I thought was going to happen, Burnley are very good until the final third, where they can't seem to score many goals, and they're not very good at set pieces, which is exactly what happened.
Fair play, But
I'm taking that as a rare victory for me.
Yeah, rare victory. Liverpool will finish fifth this season, was another one of your predictions.
It's not over yet.
Not going to stop reminding
it's
people.
It's not over
that.
Yet. But hang on, I'm the one who's reminded people as well. It's a good example of how well they've been doing. Yeah. If I thought they were going to finish fifth, that they are top of the league with 14 games to go is quite good.
A good example of how much of a pessimist you are. Maybe.
I would like to think of it as though I have inspired them to greater heights than many would have anticipated.
Well, why we are reminding people, we are live on YouTube, live on Facebook. So if you've got a question, pop it in the comments on Facebook. Our producer Ian will send them to me, and on YouTube, I'm keeping an eye myself. So we'll have a look there.
You're keeping an eye on yourself.
Yeah, well, I am, quite literally, and also keeping an eye on the comments. And if you are watching on YouTube, give us a like, subscribe, press the bell to get notifications. It will all help us very much, and we would very much appreciate it. So thanks for listening. We'll start with you, Ian. A trickier test than perhaps many might have expected against
Apart from me and you.
Apart from
me and you, yeah.
But Liverpool got the job done, and sometimes that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, you look at City's game, which I did watch almost all of it, actually, against Everton, where they weren't particularly great.
Wasn't it? It was a rubbish game to watch.
I wouldn't say it was a rubbish game to watch. I just think it was a game where Everton were pretty comfortable until City scored. And that was the end of that, because you knew Everton weren't going to score by that point. But then that's, to be fair, that's not how Liverpool's game went. But it's an example of a team doing enough to get the victory. And that's what you have to do at this stage of the season, because we're not quite at the running yet where things change. We're at that period, certainly for Liverpool, where they've got a League Cup final coming up, an FA Cup game coming up. They've got Europe will be starting in a couple of weeks as well. I think City are in more or less the same boat, part of the League Cup final. Arsenal, obviously, not in the FA Cup. Wonder who beat them. They've got the Champions League coming up as well. So it's just a matter of getting the job done. We've seen a lot of times in recent years, February's normally the month where Arsenal would mess it up, wouldn't they, and get knocked out of everything. So you can do really well for 5-6 months, and then it can just go like that.
Yeah.
And I think for Liverpool, they've just got to keep on getting those wins. That's what they did. And what made it more impressive is that, as we know from our podcast on Friday, they started with 9 players missing. Admittedly, there was one play who was involved, Tsimikas, that we weren't expecting, and then Alisson obviously dropped out. But then by the end of the game, they lost another 2 in Gravenberch and in Trent Alexander-Arnold. So to get the job done, as they did, against a Burnley team who are improving, they came from 2-0 down, didn't they, against Fulham to get a point the previous week. And I think they're going to, I mean, to be honest, I still think they'll get relegated. Oh, I just don't think they've got enough up front, but you'd be a little bit sorry that they'd gone, because at least they're giving it a bit of a proper go. And the fact that they've done that all the way through, just looking at Burnley for a sec, means that over these last 14 games they've given themselves to go for, because I thought in spells they played quite well. And if it wasn't for Kelleher making 2 good saves at important times, one very early on, the second one when Liverpool, they'd just gone 2-1 up, hadn't they? Both one-on-one saves, different in the way that he achieved them, that, you know, that's he'd made the saves that had Alisson made them, everybody would be like, well, they're the kind of saves that help win your games, win leagues, etc.
I think they're not the same Burnley. I think at the start of the season, they were trying to play a certain way and getting swatted aside, but they seem to have grown into their game.
That kind of comes, doesn't it, from the experience of playing, and they've made a couple of signings. I mean, Fofana was quite good, wasn't he? I mean, the best player, I thought, in the first game at Boxing Day is the guy who scored, O'Shea. I thought he had a good game against Liverpool at Turf Moor. and he had scored at Anfield in front of the cop. So well done to him.
And that's it for the Burnley podcast. Do you want to go back to talking Liverpool? It's impressive, I suppose, for Liverpool this season that they seem to have the personnel that even when games aren't really going their way, they brought Harvey Elliott off the bench, albeit enforced, but he seems to have an impact almost immediately. The front three, you know, that they seem to have an impact every game, at least one of them this time, all three of them. So Liverpool have those different players in their squad, don't they, capable of turning games, and that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but that's the hallmark of champions really, isn't it? Being able to grind out results in different ways, and when you're not necessarily playing well, and Liverpool didn't play well, I don't think the first half, they were quite slow, quite lethargic, looked a little bit tired the same way that they did against Arsenal the previous week. And then second half, I thought Harvey Elliott was excellent. I thought he changed the game coming on at half-time, even though it was an enforced change. Andy Robertson, I thought, really grew into the game as it went on with Horrendo as well. So I think, you know, Liverpool just did enough to get the job done. And in the end, it was fairly comfortable. And I know, as Doyley said there, Burnley, you know, they forced Kelleher into a couple of decent saves. But I think sort of by the hour mark, you felt that, that Liverpool, you know, had firm control of the game and were going to go on and win it. But yeah, I mean, not going back to the Blood Claret podcast about Burnley, but I think they are a very different side. I was quite impressed with them, actually. They can play football, which is, you know, it's always nice when a side comes up, and, you know, not nice when they go straight back down playing football. But you can see now why they're sort of sticking with Vincent Kompany, because I did sort of around Christmas time, I did think, you know, why are they not, you know, getting rid of him and trying to salvage something and bring someone in. But I think you watch them, you know, at the weekend, and you can see why, because I think they've got a good chance of, if they go down, maybe get a bit more quality in, and they could come back up.
Sure, this is the Burnley podcast.
If you've got a question about Burnley, comments, we'll try and come to it.
But also Liverpool were very professional and got the job done in the end.
Nice segue.
Yeah, nice segue. Let's talk Harvey Elliott, because...
Has he played for Burnley? Played for Blackburn. Yeah, he played for Blackburn. That's close to Burnley. Yeah. Harvey, yes.
I mean, been a strange season for Harvey Elliott, because I feel like when we see him quite often, he seems to have an impact in games. He seems to be quite decisive, but he can't really get in the team from the off quite often. And I think Van Dijk said, didn't he, that he just has to kind of keep his head down and carry on going, and eventually he will get in the team. But, I mean, he could come out this season, and if Liverpool do lift silverware, be really crucial to those wins, couldn't he?
Really crucial. You said sound like crucial.
You nearly did.
Harvey, two things about Harvey. One, he's 20. In fact, he's not 21 until April. Yeah. I think I'm right in saying that. But he's only two appearances off making 100 for Liverpool. So he's still young, but he's got a lot of experience. And that, I mean, here's the thing, right? He's 20, and he's been playing for a couple of years now for a team who 2 years ago got to the Champions League final and a top of the league, and he was involved. Okay, I know he'd play. He was in the squad, wasn't he, for the Club World Cup back in 2019, because he'd not long joined. So he's already involved. So he's been there for 5 years now. In fact, just coming on to 5 years. It's a lot of experience for a player of that age. Going back to Burnley's neighbours, Blackburn, he benefited an awful lot from that loan spell. And just going as an aside, as we tend to do on this podcast, for a very long time, when a player went out on loan from Liverpool, it was like, that's it, the end. But I think with Harvey, look at Gerald Quanta, he's another one who's gone out on loan and come back and done well. I think if they get the loan spell right now, they are given the opportunity to come in and see what they can do. And I know a lot of that's down to Klopp, and we'll have to wait and see what happens with whoever the new manager is. But Elliott's benefited from that. This season, they played 12 cup games, Liverpool. He started 11 of them. They played 24 league games, and he started three. And I think that kind of shows you the difference he's been getting. There's only him and Darwin Nunez that have been involved in every single game this season, in terms of in the matchday squad. I think Nunez has only didn't come on in one game, which was the Tottenham game where he was about to come on and Jota got sent off, and then they couldn't bring him on. But Elliott, he came on. I think almost because he's not playing all the time, that makes him even, you know what he's like as a person. You've seen enough interviews with him. Big Liverpool fan, very committed. He wants to be involved. He wants to make his mark. And when he does come on, he almost always does do something, as you say. I mean, even without the assists, which I think he's only going to get in one counted, isn't he? Because the cross took a deflection for the Diaz one. He just brought, you know, tempo. He brought a bit of... He's not the fastest player in the world, but he brings pace in terms of the possession. Yeah. And one thing that Harvey's very good at is being careful in possession. He uses the ball very, very well. Him and Curtis Jones are the same, actually. Yeah. They're two very, very good with that. That's the one thing that I been banging on for years about Harvey. The first time I saw him play, is first thing he got was like, he knows how to look after the ball and he can control it as well. And when you're in the intensity of a Premier League game like that, if you're saving time doing all of that, it all adds up.
Yeah.
So that's why he's so important for Liverpool. And yeah, the problem he's got is that he hasn't got a position. They tried him out. Yeah. He has got a position. It's the right side of the midfield three, but Szoboszlai plays there. And he can also play on the right wing, but Salah plays there. Now, we know that they're both not going to play every single game, which is why Harvey's getting his minutes. But if there was a big game, like the League Cup final, if they're all fit, he's not playing. And I think he knows that as well. But the fact that he won't be 21 till April, as I say, he's got loads of time on his side. He only has to look at Curtis Jones. You know, he was in and out the team very similar way. The only thing about Harvey's only had that one injury was Curtis obviously had loads. We'll come on to him in a bit, he's kind of made himself indispensable by being so versatile, and that's one thing that Elliott's got going for him.
Yeah, I think I like Harvey Elliott in games where, and this is probably one of them, Liverpool's seen a lot of the ball in the final third, but not quite translating that into chances, because I think he's very good at finding those little pockets of space.
Well, his first assist, Liverpool's third goal, is it's an example of that. He's about 4 or 5 yards inside the area, and he still manages to get a ball up and over the defenders to inside the far post where Nunes heads it in. Yeah. That's not easy.
Yeah,
I think it's a really important point as well that Ian made about the amount of starts he's had in the league compared to the amount of starts he's had in cup games, because you know, probably one of the biggest criticisms that's been levelled at him this season is that he's maybe not performed as well in games that he started. But there's an argument that in those games he's been playing in a second, even third string Liverpool team in those cup games. He's started probably very few games where Liverpool have had a full complement of players out. And so I think, you know, it's hard to be too critical of him, because I think until he gets a run in the team where he's starting, you know, 5, 6, 7 Premier League games with the best players around him, I don't think you can really judge how good he is. But unfortunately for him, he's not really going to get that unless injury, you know, means that Szoboszlai is out for a prolonged period or Salah's out for a prolonged period. But for him to be just 2 appearances off making 100 at 20, and I think that'll make him, if he gets that 100 soon, that'll be he'll do it in quicker time than Trent Alexander-Arnold and Steven Gerrard, which is no mean feat. And I think as well, you know, you look at Joel Quansah and Conor Bradley, and we've spoken about them a lot on the pod this season and how brilliant they've been, and it's been very much like a breakthrough season for them, and you still very much think of them as young players who are still learning the game, whereas Harvey Elliott, because he's been at the club for five years now, and he came in when he was 16, you sort of still think that you think he's older than he is, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so I think even though Conor Bradley and Joel Quansah are young, they're older than Harvey Elliott. So I think he probably gets unfair criticism at times because people think he's older and more experienced than he is.
John McEnany in the comments said Harvey was the spark the team needed to start the second half. He hustles and makes great decisions when he has the ball. And I think
that's a very good, actually, that's another thing I was going to say. You compare that to someone like Ryan Granbuch, who you could argue is more naturally talented in terms of the way that he wants to play the game. But I think his decision-making isn't quite there yet. Yeah. But that comes from the experience of playing games at that level, which Harvey's had.
Yeah. How old, Beth, is Phil Foden?
23.
I always think of Phil Foden as much younger than he is. But if you look at, I thought Pep managed him very, very well into the Man City team. It was a very slow burn. He wasn't launched into superstardom at 18. He was always sort of in and out of the team until really it was last season.
Didn't have to be, though. That's the thing. City can afford to do that.
But I think there's a bit of going on with Harvey Elliott, in the sense of the way that he's been used. He's been used in the front three. He's been used, I mean, it was 2 seasons ago, wasn't it, that he really seemed to start playing a lot more games on the right of the midfield.
That's kind of the difference.
Came out of the team when he had his injury.
The difference you mentioned about the other teenagers, like, less so Trent, but you look at Mike Lowe, and he's one from past years. Carragher, to a certain extent, certainly Steven Gerrard, they were thrown in because, we need them, you know, whereas... And they don't need Harvey Elliott, but there are times when they do need him, if that makes sense.
I think the Curtis Jones comparison is really important as well, because Curtis is 23, 24 this year. Oh, no, he's turned 23 in January, didn't he?
Yeah.
So he's, you know, 2.5 years older than Harvey Elliott, and it's only really in the last 9-10 months that he's cemented himself in the team. So for Harvey Elliott to be doing what he's doing now, I'd argue he's maybe ahead of Curtis Jones in terms of his trajectory.
Yeah, definitely. Well, It was decisive for Harvey Elliott, but it was decisive for three other players. Diogo Jota, we'll start with him. Mm. I mean,
are you worried about him?
I'm not worried about Diogo Jota. I don't think I've ever been worried about
him. I don't know. I just was checking. You're concerned for certain players.
It's funny with Jota because I can't say this at the moment. I always had this feel that I didn't really like him from the start.
but do you mean when he was scoring all those goals right at the beginning? I hate him.
No. But more and more, he's just got this knack, hasn't he? I mean, I know we've talked about it so often, this knack of being involved with goals. You know, I was looking at him and Nunes to talk about them before we started the pod, and I find so Jota's had 23 shots this season, and albeit he's played more, but Nunes has played more, but Nunes has had 64 shots, and Jota has more goals than him.
Well, to be fair, I think 31 of those shots from Nunes hit the post.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's the other thing. Jota hasn't hit the woodwork once, and he's hit it 9 times, Nunes. So it kind of shows you the different types of striker they are. They complement each other so well.
I think also Jota, he's been playing on the right, hasn't he, recently, which with the exception of the Arsenal away game last week, which he was the only one, that we were very, very much below their level. I think he's done all right over there. He scored against Chelsea, didn't he? In fact, that first goal against Chelsea, if you want to know what Diogo Jota's like, I've said this before, like as a footballer, that goal gets the pass from Conor Bradley. Sees two defenders in front of him and goes, I know what I'll do. I'm just going to run straight at them and see what happens. Yeah. And he runs straight at them, gets the bounce that, you know, makes his own luck and then tucks it away. Once he gets into that position, you expect him to score. And I think he's definitely Liverpool's. I'm not sure, we've had this conversation before when Jamie Carragher said could he be the Liverpool's best finisher in the Premier League era? Well, no. I think Robbie Fowler's better than that for a start. But he's definitely Liverpool's best finisher who's there now. Because he can sometimes look like, not that he's not interested, but he's just not involved. He should not be involved. He can be here, there and everywhere. And it just looks like it ball bounces off him. He's not got the best control sometimes. He's not always careful in possession. But as soon as the goal comes into view, he's like, oh, I had a shot here.
Yeah,
I think
remember big LFC hater siren in the chat.
That's Paul Gorse.
Shocked
me really. I don't think I ever come across a Liverpool hater.
Maybe he thinks I'm you, in which case that's even more offensive.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I don't.
Sorry, but
what was the point that I was making about Jota? When the goals appear, he just turns into a different. And when he first signed, they were like, he's very versatile, he can play across the front three. The other thing, though, that they said is that he's called him a pressing monster, is what Pep Linders called him. And you add that into his game, and he must be an absolute pain to play against if you're a defender.
Oh, absolutely.
Just leave me alone for 5 minutes.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
This podcast is supported by Progressive, a leader in RV insurance. RVs are for sharing adventures with family, friends, and even your pets. So if you bring your cats and dogs along for the ride, you'll want Progressive RV insurance. They protect your cats and dogs like family by offering up to $1,000 in optional coverage for vet bills in case of an RV accident, making it a great companion for the responsible pet owner who loves to travel. See Progressive's other benefits and more when you quote RV insurance at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet injury is an additional coverage and subject to policy terms.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I think as well, going back to the point you made about him maybe not always looking interested or always being involved, I think that's one thing that he gets slagged off for a little bit, isn't it, his overall game. I think that's something, I remember you saying that he scores a lot of snide goals and he does have that ability, or he has in the past, to do absolutely nothing.
What's a snide goal?
Do absolutely nothing for 90 minutes and then manage to bag a bag.
That sounds like being very efficient with his time.
But I'm just... on about what LFC hater Joe Murray said.
He's talking about it now, isn't he? Yeah.
But I think his work rate and him being a pressing monster, that's been very apparent the last sort of month or so, especially in the absence of Mo Salah, and deservedly reaping the rewards of that.
I think this is Jota's best season. Certainly spell. You know, like you say, since Salah's gone off to AFCON, I mean, the way he stepped it up, I quite like it. I think he's becoming a bit more of a moaner on the pitch, and that in a good way. You know, you can see him at his teammates sort of telling him to raise standards. I really like the way he's taken the mantle on from Salah. And it'd be interesting to see when Salah comes back how they coexist in the same team, because I think they're going to have some big decisions over... Because Diaz, we know, Klopp likes Diaz. He almost always plays when he's fit. So then how do you get... Well, you can't get the four of them into the same team, but how they line up, I think, will be fascinating.
Five. There's Gakpo as well.
Gakpo, sorry. Yeah, I am forgetting Gakpo. And I like Gakpo a lot. I'm not a big Gakpo hater. But I really love the goal anyway at the weekend, because if you see it, the goalkeeper comes, misses it. And there's, I think there's three Liverpool players. And I can't remember who's either side of him, but two big lads either side of him. And Jota gets in there. And we know how good he is in the air. But it was just a really good header from a very clever forward.
Yes.
Yes. But that's it. Statement made. We're moving back to Darwin Nunes. Right. Darwin Nunes, yeah, I was kind of comparing the two and look at the amount of shots he has. The goal involvement he has is off the chart. He just, I mean, but just look at that. He's in the top percentile for pretty much everything around goal. And seeing him get another goal at the weekend was I think, really well timed. How impressed have you been with him this season? You feel like he's still sort of on an upward trajectory as well, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, I mean, as much as I'd love to have Erling Haaland in this Liverpool team in terms of the amount of goals that he scores, I'm not sure there's any player that I would swap Darwin Nunes for at the moment, because, like you say, he contributes so much, doesn't he, even when he's not scoring goals. And I think, you know, I was delighted for him to get on the score sheet on Saturday, because I think there's been quite a few times lately we've spoke about him and spoke about how brilliant he's been, but it's always come with the caveat of he's not quite got his goal, he's hit the post, or he's had, you know, had the penalty saves against Chelsea. So for him to play really well, because I think he was probably one of Liverpool's better players, certainly in the second half on Saturday, for him to get the goals, and it was a tremendous header, wasn't it? It wasn't just sort of like an easy tapping goal. It was when you watch that header back, it was brilliant. So for him to get that, to sort of crown a really accomplished performance, I was really happy for him. And I think, you know, you see what it means to him, the way he ran and celebrated. You feel like it was a bit of a weight off his shoulders. I think you're just waiting now for him to go on a run where he scores, you know, 3, 4, 5 games in a row. I think that's the next step for him now. I think he's demonstrating a consistency in terms of his performance levels, because I think there's rarely a game goes by where he doesn't have a big impact on the game. But I think it would be nice to see him go on a sort of a scoring streak of, you know, 4, 5, 6 games.
So just pick up on something you said, you wouldn't swap him for Mbappe?
Bellingham's a completely different player.
Yeah, but you've got 5 forwards, you can just play in the midfield.
I think players who are available to Liverpool at this moment in time, I don't think there's anyone who I would sort of put in there in his place.
His contribution to Liverpool's all-round game, I think, often goes unnoticed, and in the banter era, especially Nunes, has seemed to have been on the receiving end of that more than probably any player in the Premier League over the past 18 months. You know, it goes unnoticed. You know, I think it doesn't by Liverpool supporters, but certainly elsewhere. You know, we've, like you say, we've seen so many times when he hasn't scored, when he's been a big part of creating chances, putting teams on the back foot, just getting the crowd up. I think that's a massive thing, and people don't necessarily always, you don't see that in the highlights, but when you have a player like Nunes whose attitude from the start gets the crowd going, I think that can really set the tone for a good performance. So I think it's great. I think you're right. I'd like to start seeing him, like Jota, get that, you know, get the third goal in a 3-1 win, get those types of goals that you know, that they just get his numbers up.
Yeah.
And I think you're seeing them slowly creep up, but I'd love to see him go on a run now of a few games, you know, especially if you're playing the likes of Brentford, Luton. That's when you really want to see Nunes be decisive and make sure that you put those teams to the sword. But what about you? Someone said that Nunes is better than Mbappe there.
That what? Hitting the post. I'll give him that.
But what have you made of him? Obviously, you've watched a lot. You've watched every minute of Liverpool's football this season.
Apart from the Leicester game.
Apart from which was the Leicester game?
The one they won in the League Cup. I was off there.
Well, yeah, okay.
But, yeah. Also, I probably fell asleep about the games as well. So.
But what have you made of his overall contribution this season?
Well, I mean, I've said from the start of this season that obviously I saw him in the summer, and it's like, well, there's no debate anymore over whether he's good enough to play for Liverpool. Yeah. That's gone, because everybody now knows that he is. What I think is quite funny is I think now you're seeing rival, not the players, because they get briefed and they do all the analysis, they know, but rival fans are sometimes coming up against Liverpool, and Nunes will like have a good game and they'll be like, hang on, he's supposed to be rubbish.
Yeah.
So he's kind of challenging those, you know, I wouldn't say misconception, because there were spells last season where he wasn't particularly good, and that's why he didn't play hardly in the last 10, 11 games of the season when Liverpool went unbeaten. I think he only started 2 of the games, if that. So it wasn't without foundation, but that's all long gone now.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't just his goals. But you say he's involved in so much stuff. I mean, it was a typical game, wasn't it, for him? He misses a really good chance, towards the end scores, gets booked for next to for something stupid, you know, and then just, you know, knocks opposing players over, and the crowd absolutely love him. So, you know, whatever fan you are of any team, if you've got a player who's on there giving 100%, you're always going to take to him. But that, he then on top of that, he's starting to make a difference, as Beth said, in games. Even, you know, you look at the Chelsea game where he didn't score, did he? But say it hit the post 15,000 times or whatever it was. You know, he made a massive difference in that game. And playing down, funny for him, sorry.
One of his best performances of the season.
Funny for him is that whenever he then has a good game, or he has a couple of good games either on the left or down the middle, I think, as we mentioned this before, is that then he has a bad one. They just move him to the left just to try and get his confidence back or move it around. So I do think he's a player that, again, going back to if there's a cup final coming up in a couple of weeks, I'd be amazed if he doesn't start.
Oh, he has to start.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. He's talking, it's a cup final, and now we're talking like, he has to start.
That is why the front three is so fascinating, because let's say Salah, which hopefully will be fit for that game. I mean, it's not a conversation really for today, but it does make me think, who starts in that game?
I think on form at the moment, I don't know what sort of order you'll put them in, but I think Salah's obviously got to be on the pitch, Nunes has got to be on the pitch, and Jota's got to be on the pitch.
But there's a reason why Klopp would come to Diaz.
Yeah.
I think tactically he obviously he helps the shape, doesn't he? And there must be a reason why Klopp picks him in almost every game.
Yeah, and I think lately he's looked a lot closer to the player that Liverpool signs. I think still maybe not quite hitting those heights, and perhaps that should be expected considering that, you know, he's had a really serious injury that he's been coming back from, and obviously the most horrendous personal circumstances off the pitch as well in the last few months. So I think credit to him for getting back to the level he's got to. I think he is infuriating at times, because I think that there's moments where you really would just love him to take someone down the line and beat his man in the same way he did when he first came to Liverpool. And sometimes he almost seems a little bit reluctant to do that. But he is a fantastic player, and there is a reason that Jurgen Klopp continues to pick him. I mean, my one concern actually with Nunes at the moment is he has picked up quite a few daft yellow cards lately, and I'm starting to think, how many more does he need before he gets a two-match suspension?
I think it's two or three up, isn't he?
The last thing Liverpool want is him getting that before the Manchester City game, for example, because that's the sort of game you want Darwin Nunes playing. And again, that's probably a testament to how much he's improved this season, because it seems sort of inconceivable that he wouldn't play in that game.
Yeah, and if you look at last season, like, I thought Cody Gakpo got all the football because tactically he seems to understand what Klopp wanted from him, whereas Nunes, like you say, at the end of the season, it's almost like they took him out of the team and thought, well, you know what, we'll have to get him up to speed. And they, to their credit, they did that so well in the summer. But now they've got him up to speed, Gakpo can't really get in the team because he's really dropped into the...
He's still scored 9 or 10 goals.
I'm not knocking him, but compared to the levels the other three or four are operating at this season, I mean, Diaz is one, isn't he? I think he's had a strange season, Diaz. Obviously, some really difficult personal problems away from the pitch. But he has been inconsistent at times.
If you go from the Burnley game when Jota came back and Diaz set up Jota for that goal right at the end, have a look at what the three of them have done in terms of the numbers. I think Jota's got eight goal involvements in 10, and Diaz is not far off that as well. And Nunes, similar. And just going back to the League Cup final points, I don't think Salah starts. I don't think he starts.
That's a big...
There's two reasons for that. One, he still hasn't made his comeback yet, and the final's in 11, 12 days, so it's not far. It's 13 days.
Still two games.
Yeah, but it's 13 days off, right? And he hasn't played a game for Liverpool in 6 weeks now. Mm. And also, in the League Cup, he hardly plays a game anyway, normally. So if there's one game that he can't really complain too much about not starting, it's that one.
I will have you a gentleman's bet.
No.
Right here, that he starts that game.
How much?
£5.
£5? Yeah. £5? Yeah, there you go.
Right, but because I think Salah, the personality is, will start that game.
Okay, we'll see.
I can't imagine him not starting. There you go. It's a podcast first. And it's first.
Of course, what will happen literally in training tomorrow, all three of the boys will just run into each other and reel themselves out, course, just to annoy me.
Well, we'll avoid the bet if not everyone is fit.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Starting to regret his decision.
He's backtracking.
Me? I'm not. I look, that helps me. I'm not worried. Right, what else did I have on the agenda?
Curtis.
Well, Trent's injury first.
Yeah.
That is a worry for Liverpool, isn't it? I mean, they've just got him back. Klopp did say after the game, didn't he, that I think Trent would have carried on had he had his way.
But yeah.
It was a knee.
It's a strange one because they quite clearly can't. They're just concerned. I think if they'd only had like two players out injured, they would have let him play on. But they had so many, they just went, nah, we cannot be doing with somebody else being out for ages, especially with, you know, the right-back situation being what it is at the moment, although that could easily change in the next couple of days anyway. So,
yeah.
I think they're just taking no chances. And segueing, again, into Curtis, who moved to right-back and did very, very well.
Is that the first time he's played right back this season in the game that you didn't see?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. First time I saw him play.
Yeah. Right back against Leicester in the League Cup. But, I mean, the levels Curtis Jones has put in this season, I think, has been remarkable. But versatility like that, I mean, is just... It's huge for a Klopp team because Klopp demands that of his players. But I think it just shows a maturity, doesn't it, in Curtis Jones's game?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's, in one sense, I think being a bit of a utility player or a versatile player can work against you when you're a young player coming into a team because, you know, like we've said with Harvey Elliott, what is his best position? And I think with Curtis Jones, you know, he obviously came through as a winger, didn't he, from the academy, and there was maybe a little bit of time when you thought, where is his best position? But I think he's actually turned that into a strength, and like you say, that versatility to be able to play at right back and not really put a foot wrong. It is hugely encouraging. I mean, I wouldn't want him starting there in a huge game against Manchester City, up for example. But the fact that he can turn his hand to that is really useful, particularly considering the problems Liverpool have had with injury issues at fullback this season. So yeah, it's a real credit to him. And yeah, I think a year ago even people were probably questioning, does he have a long term future at Liverpool? Is he going to be a regular fixture in this team? And I think now he's probably one of the first names on the team sheet, which again is huge credit to the work that he's done.
I think as well that versatility allowed Liverpool it was an enforced change, but allowed Liverpool to get another attacking player on to overload Burnley and eventually make the breakthrough. It was, having that in his locker is invaluable, isn't it?
Yes.
That's not the point of the podcast, though.
I've spoken enough already. There'll be people complaining about me talking on it.
Let's talk Alonso then, because we're moving on from the game now. I think we've covered every big theme from that game. We want to talk Xabi Alonso.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
A massive win for him at the weekend. Moving 5 points clear of the Bundesliga. I don't think people quite... I've talked to Gorsi on the phone before about this. I was thinking, don't think people quite recognise the achievement that would be if he can beat, and there's still a long way to go, and we've seen teams with bigger leads collapse in the Bundesliga and Bayern's machine sort of...
Do you mean Dortmund?
Through there, Dortmund. but he'd be the first manager, wouldn't he, correct me if I'm wrong, to break up that... I think Bayern Munich won it every season since Klopp departed.
Yeah.
So he'd be the first manager to break that monopoly up. Second, they call them Leverkusen. Not Neva, because that wouldn't work.
Leverkusen, which is interesting because obviously they're German that's not the German word for never.
Yeah.
I don't know what the German word for never is. I did German at GCSE, but I know it's not never.
I don't think that's the interesting bit. I think the interesting bit would be if he won the title with
Leverkusen. Excuse me. Well, let's ask our producer which was more interesting.
no comment. You know, I think it would be such a massive achievement, but they won that game. They won it in impressive fashion. I mean, what he's doing there is really, really impressive. And it's not just because he's an ex-Liverpool player that he's being linked. Where with Gerrard, I often thought just the emotional connection was the link.
Did win the league with Rangers, to be fair.
He did, but with Alonso, it seems to be a really good body of work that means that he is...
Well, he's only been there. He's not even been there. Is it a year now? Is it you? Yeah. So, I mean, by the end of the season, it'll be 18 months, you know, so I could count the calendar years, months even. And with Alonso, it's funny, if you want to know an example of how big a deal it is that Bayer Leverkusen are doing that well, if they'd have lost that game, they'd have gone to second. And they've had this season where they've not lost a single game and drawn about two or three, and that's it. And still they've not been able to get away from Bayern Munich until winning that game, which obviously 3-0. Fairly convincingly. Always good to see a goal where, Chris Beasley, our colleague, would be made up for that last goal because the goalkeeper had gone up and left his goal unattended, which is a word we don't say a lot. Mm-hmm. I think for Alonso, the big thing is what's going to happen over the next couple of months, because he's got to get this over the line now. It's still in the cup, aren't they? I mean, you would expect Bayern to win almost every single game between now and the end of the season because of who they are.
Yeah.
And it's just that it'll be an interesting test of his... It is a test of his managerial ability, isn't it? Mm. It's one thing, you know to set up a team, yeah, you know to be this, that, and all the other, and you know the players, but then it's actually the last bit of, right, and now we need to try and win something. I need to take a team, certainly one against the odds, to go and win something. That's the hard bit.
Yeah. Well, since I think Hulé was appointed, Liverpool have always appointed managers with silverware on their CV.
Mm.
You know, Rodgers was the one, wasn't he, that didn't have the championship.
No, I don't think he did.
They got through the playoffs, didn't they? So
yeah, if you could Rodgers win anything. That.
Roy Hodgson, you can't argue with his record at Malmo, can you? what's the Swiss team whose name I can't remember?
Neuchâtel Chamois.
That's it, yeah. You can't argue with his record there. But, you know, Rodgers was the one, and I always felt from the beginning with Rodgers there wasn't the support from him from fans because he didn't have that on his CV, whereas Alonso, if you can get it...
I think with Rodgers as well, is that going to Anfield, taking over at Liverpool, he was like using it as a finishing school for himself as a manager, and you can't really do that. And I think while Alonso is obviously a young manager, he's not young at dealing with massive teams because he's been at Bayern, Real Madrid and Liverpool. And I mentioned this before, it's the Zidane thing, you know.
Yeah.
Zidane taking over at Real Madrid after about a year at Castilla, I think it was. And it was like, well, what's he doing that for? He's had no experience. He's like, well, yeah, but he's played for Real Madrid for a lot of years. He knows exactly what that dressing room's like. He knows exactly what to expect. He knows all about the pressure. So he's probably the best person who could probably do it. There might be better managers low down the league at getting things, you know, from teams who shouldn't really be doing that. But that doesn't really help you when you walk into somewhere like Real Madrid. And I think, obviously, Liverpool aren't set up the same way as Real Madrid, but Alonso will know exactly what to expect. Yeah. Whereas perhaps somebody else who's linked with the job perhaps does not.
Yeah, I look at Alonso and I think, you know, obviously when Liverpool got Klopp, he was one of the most sought-after managers on the planet. Him and Ancelotti were the two that I think most Liverpool fans were sort of wishing for at the time when he came in. But you look at Klopp's record, he'd won two Bundesliga titles, the German Cup. He obviously got to the Champions League final, ended in heartbreak. His personality was the sort of, almost as beyond the trophies, it was his personality that was the unique selling point. Alonso, and he'd also taken Mainz up, Alonso's record, if he does win the Bundesliga, won't be too dissimilar to Klopp's. You know, he'd have one Bundesliga title with a team that was massive, massive underdogs, taking a team from also runs to title challenges and winners. He took Real Sociedad B. It was their first promotion, I think, in 50 years to the second division in Spain. So that's sort of your Mainz. Mm-hmm. So, and then he has the personality and the affection with the Liverpool crowd. So it does sort of all make sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's weird, really, because I think usually when there's sort of, you know, a manager leaving, you have a list of five or six candidates who you feel have maybe sort of really strong or potentially really strong contenders. And I think, you know, some of the candidates on the market now, Zidane, is proven that he can win trophies at Real Madrid, but I don't necessarily think he would be the right fit for Liverpool. And I think, you know, Alonso might not have won as much. He might, how many Champions Leagues does Zidane won as manager? Three, is it?
Zidane, I think it was three, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think he won the three on the trot.
Yeah.
So even though sort of the silverware sort of trumps what Alonso has done so far, I think the fact that he has the potential to do something really, really special this season, coupled with that sort of the romantic element of his, you know, a player who was adored by Liverpool fans and will therefore be probably given a little bit more time, I think, if things don't go to plan. And I think as well, you know, this Liverpool team is still quite new, isn't it? It's still sort of in its early stages, which is why it's so impressive that they're where they are this season, why Ian Doyle perhaps thought they were going to finish fifth. So to bring in an exciting young manager as well, you know, hopefully to be able to sort of make his real sort of mark on the team would be really exciting.
Yeah, someone in the comments has said, do you think Bayern might try and snatch him before Liverpool do? And Bayer Leverkusen's chief executive said at the weekend that he thinks that he will end up staying put.
Well, he's got his fans, you know, that,
I don't know, because sometimes sometimes in German clubs, I think they're quite...
They have to say stuff like that but they have to say stuff like that when they are still competing for on three points. And the other complication is that Bayer Leverkusen could well end up playing Liverpool in the Europa League.
True.
So
absolutely,
they can't. They're not going to say anything.
The point I was trying to get to is, do you think Liverpool have a bigger... And if they do go for Alonso, they have a bigger fight in their hands, perhaps, to persuade him? Because he is quite... Obviously, the Liverpool job would be very attractive to him, but it won't be the only job offer, I'm sure, that will come his way. And secondly, he does seem quite a sensible guy, and I remember Klopp being linked with a number of clubs. I mean, he famously turned United down, didn't he, or did they turn... I think he turned United down earlier in his career because he didn't feel he was ready. Alonso almost strikes me as that sort of... He'll have the confidence in his own ability to say no, not yet, if he doesn't feel like it's the right time. Do you think there's a chance that this could be quite a big fight to persuade him?
Not really, because whoever takes over is going to end up getting a really good Liverpool team, which is unusual, because the last time somebody came from the outside and had a good Liverpool team to take over is never. So, there you go.
I think in a way...
Leverkusen.
Liverpool.
Leverkusen.
I think certainly if he wins the Bundesliga, Liverpool is probably the perfect club for him, because I think, you know, you go to Bayern and instantly the expectation, particularly if they've not won it the absolutely year before, is to win the league. That's sort of a non-negotiable, where it's not quite the same as Liverpool. Liverpool, obviously, fans want you to win the league, but if you don't, it's not a crisis for Bayern. So I think the only other club that could sort of trump Liverpool to it would be Real Madrid. Now, they extended Ancelotti's contract last year, I want to say, I think.
Certainly it was recently.
Yeah, fairly recently. And I almost think that at this stage of his career, Real Madrid might be too big for him. I think not that he wouldn't be capable of doing the job. He could go there and be a huge success. But I think Liverpool is big enough that it can, you know, really elevate his status and take him to the next level as a manager, but not big enough that it's going to ruin his career if it doesn't all go to plan.
Yeah.
Also, I think he's got a greater affinity for Liverpool than he has at Real Madrid and Bayern Munich.
He has a great affinity for Liverpool. Do you think so? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
not Real Madrid.
Nope.
No. Why did you say that?
I've just said that.
I was going to ask you before we move on from Alonso.
I based that on... I saw an interview when he was talking about it. I can't remember where I saw it, but he definitely did say.
Yeah. Well, you will be one of the people old enough here to have dealt with Alonso as a player.
Yes.
What was he like?
Would you like to hear, given the fact I was going to say funny story, but now that the bar's been set so high, not funny story.
What was the bar set so high by?
With the whole Leverkusen thing,
I don't think that... If you tune into this podcast for comedy, I don't know whether that would be a cup of tea. But anyway, go on.
Well, we used to speak to him in the mix zone because obviously his English wasn't absolutely brilliant. It's very good now, by the way, I have to say. It was very good by the time he left.
Yeah.
But he would always be concentrating very much on what you were asking him. So the look on his face was always as though he was talking to an idiot. Like he thought I was one, which, to be fair, he's not far off. But
it's the same look.
And anybody watching this at the moment. Yeah. But no, as I say, he was very, very good, very knowledgeable, very polite, which I've always got a lot of time for. Yeah. Politeness from footballers. And
looks a polite man, doesn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Very stylish as well.
What did he say? Dreamboat? Is he a dreamboat?
He's a gorgeous man.
He is, basically, yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
And I think as well, there was a lot made with the weekend about after that win and bringing his backroom staff onto the pitch and making sure they got sort of a round of applause from the fans as well, which is a very Klopp thing to do.
A lot of Arsenal fans made a big deal of that, didn't they? Saying, look at this is why I never been able to go at them. And, well, he didn't pick up a camera and start snapping people and dancing along to ABBA, did he?
But I think there's probably a sense... that he could, he's a very Liverpool manager, and maybe this is maybe a bit too romantic, but that transition from Bill Shankly to Bob Paisley to a enigmatic manager, but still, you know, a little bit quieter, not quite as big a character, there maybe are some parallels between Klopp and Alonso in that sense.
I'm all in Alonso. Just very quick question, Alonso themed. I remember his debut very, very clearly. It was Norwich, wasn't it, Anfield, and he just the way he sprayed the ball around was like, it was one of those debuts that you went, wow, you know, you almost the second he'd got the ball, sprayed a couple of passes around, you thought, this guy's got great class. Do you remember his debut?
No, I can't remember.
No. I was just going to ask, are there any other players' debuts like that that you remember from the moment they got the ball, you're thinking, oh, God, they've got a player here?
Harvey Elliott. I've mentioned it before, but to be fair, that was against Oldham in the EFL Trophy.
Yeah,
not quite the same.
Yeah. Any bigger names?
Was Darwin Núñez in the Community Shield?
Yeah, well, I wasn't thinking like, oh, he's going to be the greatest player ever at that point, to be fair.
I was when he whipped his shirt off.
That's a good question there. So between yourselves, have a think.
God. Trying to think.
We can't have dead space. I'll talk.
Yeah. I was going to say, I can tell you what his best performance at Liverpool was, and that was against Everton. Everton in the 3-1 derby were... Gerrard got sent off really early on, and then it was up to him to step it up, and I thought he was very, very good on that day. That was his best.
Virgil van Dijk scored against Everton on his debut, didn't he?
Yeah, but that was very much like a goal a moment. With Alonso, it was more like from the moment they got the ball. This is what I'm wrong about. It wasn't his debut, so it kind of doesn't really count.
Oh, brilliant. So what are you talking about?
I remember Andy
his debut was against Tottenham, wasn't it? It was Tottenham, wasn't it? Away?
I was talking about. But I remember Andy Carroll scoring twice against Man City and thinking, yeah, we've got the next Shearer. Lovely.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was fully on board with Andy Carroll. I really thought Liverpool had a great player.
Something wrong. Well, yeah, again, yeah. What did he do?
He scored a great goal at Wembley that would be a very good memory for me.
Who was Thiago's debut against? I remember his first few times I saw him play thinking, like, wow, he's a different
player. Came on against Chelsea.
Yeah,
they got the virus.
Yeah,
Diaz, he's one. Yeah, he had a good first game.
The great name, Spit Roasted Penguin, has said, didn't Andy Carroll. Yeah. Thrice in his own debut against City 3-0. Well, Peter,
can we just not dwell on that?
He's got a great header and a long range left footed effort. And I thought, great left foot, great in the air. Liverpool have got some player here, put him together with Suarez, and nothing will stop us. A lot of things stopped us. But yeah, anyway. Quick before we wrap this up, thanks, Spit Rose, for that one. Blue cards, you want to talk blue cards?
Blue cards, ridiculous idea. Sinbin's not a bad idea, but only if they're going to replace yellow cards, which they never will. Having another card just makes the game even more complicated and puts more power into the referee's hands when they should be concentrating more on streamlining the rules so they can implement them more effectively. Next question.
You're the one that insisted that I asked that question. I've got two what we call in Liverpool Bulls alongside me, so I would... I'm leading to something. I'm certainly not from Lincoln. I thought you might have both been in favour of Simbins.
Well,
because we're from rugby league family.
Yeah, basically that it doesn't really work like that. And the one problem with the Simbins in rugby league is that referees can sometimes hide behind them rather than sending players off for offences that they should have been. Because what they can do then is put them on report or Simbin them, they can deal with them later on.
At this moment in time, the relationship that football clubs and fans have with referees and officiating in general does not need to be made any more complicated. I think Jurgen Klopp said on Saturday, didn't he, it'd be like the Wild West if he introduced a third card, and it would imagine that the length of the debates that would be had about officiating
with longer than this podcast.
I just think they just cannot make officials' lives more difficult, and by introducing something like that they do. I mean, I still think VAR was meant to make their lives easier. It's made it much harder because now we all get another look at something and they get another chance to make a mistake, don't they? So I think it wasn't perfect the way it was, but I preferred it pre-VAR. If you put another layer into it, it's good.
Don't mind the offsides of VAR. They're pretty much...
I think you need to bring in...
Even though I don't even love that because it's so, you know...
It's
like the goal line, isn't it?
They need to bring in the automated... offsides, don't they? The ones that you have at major tournaments. I don't know why. I know a lot of clubs voted against that, didn't they, for some reason? But I think they need to bring that in. But that's a different story for a different day.
It's AI, isn't it? Can't trust AI.
We'll give the final word to Spit Roasted Penguin before we
can you just stop saying.
He said you guys are filthy minds. You too. Spit Roast can be. Oh, wait, is that worse? Okay. Well,
it's a boozy in a penguin. Apart from it, unless it's a chocolate one. Yep. There you go. But not a breakaway. RIP breakaways.
Yeah, RIP breakaways.
That sad is, day. That was a sad day. That was a blow.
Yeah, it was. Right, before we go, where can we find you?
In St. Helens. I am on Twitter at Ian Doyle Sport, and I'm also on Instagram and Threads at Ian_Doyle_Sport.
Lovely. Beth, where can we find you?
Just on Twitter at Beth_Lindop.
At Joe Rimmer 88 on X, not Twitter.
It's Twitter. Very no one calls it X.
Thank you for listening. We'll be live again on Friday. We'll be in between with different podcasts, but live every Monday, Friday on the Blood Red podcast. Please give us a like, follow, subscribe, download our app. It's really good. And thanks for all your support. We'll be back then. See you then. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.